Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. Well, if you've never heard of the Top Tech Tidbits newsletter, you might want to listen to this show to find out what it's all about. It's a very useful newsletter that we make a lot of use of ourselves for show ideas sometimes.
We'll speak with Dean Martineau, originator and editor of this reliable and helpful resource, about its history and what goes into creating it each week. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Dean Martineau.
The only thing I can say to young people, if you're in school, even if you think school is either a pain or useless or not worth the bother, try to succeed at it. Try to do well in it. Try to, you know, play the game, because you can. Your opportunities in life are going to be a lot better if you play the game and succeed than if you don't. I did reasonably well in high school and college, and I think that those have been one factor that gave me some of the opportunities that I've had. Some people have a choice to do well or not. Some people don't have that choice. But if you do and just don't necessarily want to apply yourself, I hope you do, because you're going to have more opportunities.
Well, and even your story about going through law school and getting the degree and never really practicing law, it sounds like many of the professions and volunteer experiences that you've had were based on things that you learned in law school, even if it didn't require a law degree to do it.
Oh, law school was very beneficial to me in a lot of aspects of life. I don't regret going through it at all, even though, and it also is not that uncommon for people to get that degree and either practice law for a short time and get totally fed up with it, or not practice law at all. That is not an uncommon event.
Well, you know, I think it's generally true that where we wind up in life later on often depends on what foundation was laid earlier in our lives and what stepping stones we took to get where we wind up later in life. But also, it's important to find something that you're passionate about, something you really enjoy. You usually succeed and do a lot better if you're involved in something that you enjoy a lot.
And everything that we've all been saying applies to everybody, whether you're visually impaired or not. It's just that people with visual impairments have additional hurdles they have to overcome. And so I think Dean's advice to make sure that you've got the best credentials you can get applies even more to somebody who might have to use that to overcome an extra hurdle.
And we've also seen in previous episodes of Eyes on Success that education doesn't end when you're out of high school or college. It can be a continuing experience. In particular, if your vision changes later in life and your capabilities change, we've seen many circumstances where just getting some additional education or training can make one succeed and overcome some challenges that may occur when your vision does change later in life and open up some new opportunities for you.
Let's start by meeting Dean Martineau.
Thank you for inviting me to be on the program this week. It's an honor. I've been announcing, I don't know how long it's been that I've been announcing your shows in Top Tech Tidbits, but it's nice to be on this side of the microphone. I'm Dean Martineau, and since December of 2004, I've been creating Top Tech Tidbits for Thursday. I think we're on, although the count is a little bit uncertain, I think we just finished issue 561.
Wow. Most of our audience and most of your audience has visual impairments. Do you?
Yes, I've never had any vision. Grew up in Washington State. Spent the vast majority of my life up in the Northwest, except now I'm not there anymore. I'm in a combination of Florida and England.
And we'll learn more about Dean's path as we go through the rest of the show.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is Top Tech Tidbits, the free weekly email newsletter that Dean originated and creates.
So, Dean, tell us how you got into the field of adaptive technology.
One fine day in the late 80s, I went to law school. This didn't turn out to enhance my career a lot. I got a law degree, which I used in a couple of other ventures not related to practicing law. But what I also got when I went to law school in the late 80s was some technology. And you may have a few readers who remember this initiative. Right around then, the Braille and Speak came out from Blasey Engineering, and this little device revolutionized a lot of our lives.
And we did an episode with Dean Blasey where he discussed the origin and history of the Braille and Speak, and that was show number 1225 from over 4 years ago.
So I understand that Top Tech Tidbits wasn't the first publication that you were involved in. Can you tell us a little bit about your history in that regard?
For a while there, the blind were ahead of everybody else in terms of having a portable device that we could carry around and store content digitally and read content digitally. And so I got pretty excited about this along with everybody else, and I called Dean Blasey one day and suggested that we start a Braille and Speak users group, and he thought that was a good idea. And so a couple of times a year, I put out Battery High. That's because the Braille and Speak would always announce Battery Low as the battery died. Yes, so I put out a number of issues of that, and so my voice got known to a lot of people.
So I actually had a similar device to the Braille and Speak called the VersaBraille. For people who may not have known what those devices were, they were pretty revolutionary at the time. Can you just quickly give an idea of what they did?
Well, the VersaBraille was cool, too. I always wanted one of those, but they were kind of expensive, naturally. That was a strictly Braille, if I recall, kind of a note-taker sort of thing. You could edit. It wrote on cassettes, and there were always problems if you didn't use the right kind of cassette. You had problems, and sometimes even if you did, I think, use the right kind of cassette. But it was a word processor that we could use. I think it came out before the Braille and Speak, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
And I think that was out in the mid 80s. But the Braille and Speak was more within people's price range.
So these were essentially, as you say, portable note takers for the blind. So, like you said, we had these much before the sighted world did, in some sense.
Yeah, I mean, with the VersaBraille was cool. You could read Braille manual. I mean, that was remarkable. And the Braille and Speak, you could actually get online with it, 2400 baud modems. And
I've written some computer codes that way from home, logging into my computer at work through the VersaBraille and a modem. Yeah.
It was quite wonderful. I used to do some of my law school homework on the Braille and Speak reading. I could call up and get the cases and read them on the Braille and Speak, which that synthesizer now, people would laugh at it. They probably wouldn't use it considering the high quality synthesizers we have now by comparison. But back then, I mean, for far as I was concerned, that was pretty wonderful.
Getting through law school at that time with the level of technology must have been quite a challenge. How did you accomplish that? I mean, a lot of material wasn't even accessible in electronic format.
Well, the thing is, people thought that, and I always thought that compared to what I could have chosen, I mean, getting a degree in history, for example, where you've got to skim read all kinds of massive number of books, law, you had, you know, a small number of books that you had to read for a lot of classes, and well, it was Recording for the Blind back then, now it's Learning Ally, was a pretty good source of those, or Disabled Student Services came through with the rest. But then after about the second, well, we were on a quarter system, about the second quarter, we had free access to these legal databases, Westlaw and Lexis. You know, you pay for those things. I don't even know how it works now, but back then it was pretty expensive to get that access once you weren't in law school. But of course, those database manufacturers wanted everybody to use them, so all the students had free access. I wasn't as highly interested in law as I perhaps should have been, but boy, was I interested in reading all the newspapers that I could get on Lexis. I mean, that was like totally exciting. I could do an awful lot of my work that way. So it wasn't as inaccessible as you might think back then. I could get on with my Apple IIe or with the Braille and Speak on those things, and I could accomplish any research I needed to accomplish.
So what happened after law school?
Around then, you know, a lot more blind people were getting into computers by the time the 90s were coming along. I had been an Apple II user, very happy Apple IIe user of Braille Edit and Bex, for those who remember those things, since the 80s. And that's where I really got my technology start. In fact, I guess I got my technology start writing a few articles for the Raised.Computing newsletter. And those things are actually available online somewhere if somebody wants to find them.
You're bringing back some old memories there.
Real old memories, yes. Well, I'm definitely dating myself here.
So you said you got the law degree but never really practiced law. What did you do?
I did some mediation training. The mediation we did was voluntary, but the training wasn't, and that was law-related. Later, I did some work as a guardian ad litem, which is it probably varies from state to state, but you're advocating for the child in legal cases. And so I did some of those. But what I did mainly was to start doing technology training. And around that time, there were some tutorials you could buy that would cost, I don't know, $7,500, $125, I don't remember exactly how much they were, dollars. They were very good. And I thought, I didn't criticize the people that were charging that kind of money, but I thought, this isn't right. Blind people need to be able to get information about computers, computing information, word processors, whatever, for the same price that you can go down to the store and buy a book, you know, buy a $20, $30 book. So I started creating these cassette tutorials. We had DOS and we had the internet back in the days of shell accounts and, I don't know, one or two WordPerfect things. I don't remember how many. So I would sell those. Didn't make too much money on these because I wasn't charging very much, but made some. Did some training for different agencies and organizations.
So it sounds like eventually you drifted over to working more into rehab-type services. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I fell into being in the right place at the right time, a training contract where there's a little team of us that go into Social Security offices and train their blind employees on how to use their equipment. So I've been doing that ever since. Sometimes it's very busy. Sometimes it's not busy enough, but it's a wonderful contract. So I have all kinds of arcane, useless knowledge about how to use different Social Security programs that I use when I'm on that job. And in there also, I created a computer magazine called Sound Computing. I do not miss cassettes. I so do not miss cassettes. Recording on them, duplicating them, mailing them out. I do not miss these activities.
Somewhere around then, you started Top Tech Tidbits. How did that come about?
I decided that what I wanted to do was to fill the need, because I've always been kind of a resource collector, that I would fill the need by, well, doing what I'm doing with Tidbits, a little very concise, so it didn't take you very long to read it, weekly newsletter just giving a couple sentences and a link. And if you want to care about it, you follow the link, and if you don't, you don't. If you don't know what the link is about, I used to encourage people to ask me questions. I'm not sure that text didn't carry over when Tidbits became a flying blind publication, but people sometimes still do. And I figure you can ask questions or you can Google or you can find out what it means if you don't know what it means. But that way it gives people a one-stop place to keep up with audio, technology, internet-related information as it pertains to the blind. And so I started it with some uncertainty, and it's been going ever since.
You mentioned that Top Tech Tidbits became a flying blind publication. How did that happen?
In about 2008, when the subscription list got up to about 3,000 people, my servers couldn't handle it anymore, and I was going to drop it. And I met Larry Lewis at a training, and he said, you know, it's worth it for me to take it on as a business publication, as part of my business, and use our professional-grade email software to send it out. And that was good. I kind of missed the good old days of autonomy, no ads and all that sort of thing. But at the same time, I do not miss battling with the mail process and handling the subscription list. So it works out really well this way. It's a flying blind publication. And every once in a while, Larry tells me to soften my tone if I'm commenting on one of the major players in the technology business a little too harshly. But almost never has that happened. And you know, I'm responsible for 99% of the content, and he puts an ad in there for something that he wants to sell and handles the marketing of it.
For our listeners that are not familiar with Flying Blind, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, somewhat. Again, that's Larry's company. He sells a variety of technology and does training. Not too much training. He's mostly into sales, I believe. He has a range of products that he sells. He's written some articles, done some work for the American Foundation for the Blind. Every once in a while, you'll see something in tidbits of something he's written. I believe he came out with a book on teaching the iPad to students. So, you know, his company is involved in a variety of aspects, but I think mostly sales. And that's something I did a long time ago and decided that I did not really want to sell technology because there isn't any company that I'm so attached to or so convinced about the value of that I can sell them with, you know, unequivocal fervor. Although I'm really happy with my HIMS Braille products and I'm really happy with my iPhone, I just didn't know that I could really do sales in that way, so I decided not to go that route.
One of the things I think is really neat about Top Tech Tidbits, as you say, it's very concise. So it comes to you once a week. There isn't a lot of clutter in there. You basically give, you know, here's some interesting thing that you may want to know about this week and a link to it. So you don't have to read through a lot. It doesn't, you know, clutter up your mailbox every day or anything like that. And if you want to find out more, you go to the link and you've got your useful information. We find it very useful for finding show ideas as well as, you know, about technology and news just personally myself. I like to keep track of.
Yeah, that's the idea. It's supposed to be very quick. Doesn't take you much time. I suspect an awful lot of people still get it by email. We have around 6,000 subscribers. I have to assume that most of them find it useful or they would unsubscribe from it.
Where do you get the content for Top Tech Tidbits?
There was a tweet the other day, of course, evolved considerably from the days when I started this. Somebody tweeted, remember the good old days when everything on Top Tech Tidbits didn't come from Twitter? And I commented, well, you know, I'm always open to new ideas for content, but just about everything that matters comes on Twitter nowadays, and it's much easier now. And maybe I've gotten lazy. I used to look around and check websites and things for content, but now I kind of let it come to me on Twitter or email. And if somebody emails me something, I will almost always, even if I kind of question the tremendous value of whatever they think is valuable, I will almost always include it if somebody asks me to.
So we know you put a listing in Top Tech Tidbits almost every week about Eyes on Success, and we really appreciate that because you're broadcasting the information to a lot of people who are exactly the people that we're trying to reach. But what other kinds of listings do you typically put in there?
Well, as I say, nowadays it's largely Twitter. I know what I'm interested in, and I kind of have a sense of what I think people are interested in, and so I tend to filter for that. I tend also, if I can, I call it sort of guerrilla blindness awareness, if there are some blog posts or something that encourages somebody about the capabilities of the blind or might help somebody adjust to vision loss, I'll throw those in, even if they aren't directly related to technology. After all, they are on the internet.
And what kinds of submissions do not wind up in Top Tech Tidbits?
The stuff that I don't like to do very much, I went away from it, I've gotten back toward it. All the hype. I don't care what you're going to do. When you do it, when it's available, tell me about it. So now I tend sometimes, if there's a new product, they're putting out videos or notices on the web about it, I'll say, well, here's this if you want to read about it. You know, but I don't, when they announce a product that you can't get for quite a while, I will often not mention it or only mention it very briefly because I don't care about hype. Although I compromised my principles lately and put in something about WWDC and all this. I don't care what you're going to do. When you do it, then I'll be interested. When we can actually get it, when we can actually buy it, and I like to put prices in there so we know what it actually is going to cost. Sometimes that's hard to find those prices, but I try to find them and put them in the blurb. I try to remove extraneous content as much as possible. People send me blurbs and I end up cutting them down usually because people put extraneous words in there that don't need to be there. I'm not your marketing division, so some people want me to market their conference or their product. As far as I'm concerned, I'm here for the interested public, not for the businesses. You can do your own marketing. I will mention new products and things, but not as much, perhaps. and I don't tend to mention local events. We have, like I say, 6,000 subscribers in all parts of the world, so they're probably not going to come to San Francisco or Cincinnati for whatever daily event you're having.
Well, I think you do a very good job of giving people just the relevant information and highlights and what's of interest to most of the population of visually impaired people.
And I like the fact that you tend to keep each item to one or two sentences plus a link.
Yeah, every once in a while more, but not usually, and sometimes very short sentences. And that's actually one of the problems with distributing this thing when I was sending it out, is it comes out as spam because it's a little bit of text and a whole bunch of links, and it was mass distributed, which definitely gave it a high spam rating.
And you have some suggestions on how people can avoid getting top tech tidbits thrown into their spam folder.
Well, right. Flying blind depends on the distribution. And the idea with that is if you add e-news at flying-blind.com, I believe that's the address, to your whitelist, or if you go in and, you know, depending on what you use for email, I know with the iPhone, if something goes into junk, if you move it into your inbox, that removes it from junk. If you're using Outlook and something goes into junk, if you go into the context menu and you can look at the junk options and you can say you always accept, you know, email from this person or from this address, and that removes it from junk. So it'll vary according to what you use for email, and I don't know the other PC or Mac clients how they work, but that's the general idea of that, and so it is usually possible.
One of the features of Top Tech Tidbits that I really appreciate is that you tend to cluster items that are on a similar topic. So if some major manufacturer has a new release this week, you'll have three or four line items, and whether they're podcasts or articles or whatever, you always cluster them. That's really handy.
Well, I can be faulted on my organization in general because I'm not organized really, and things actually sometimes are clustered and sometimes aren't clustered. It kind of depends on the order I do them. And somebody wrote to me, I've only had like one request saying, could you like organize this better? And I said, well, probably not. So yeah, sometimes I do cluster things, and then sometimes there'll be something Apple followed by something Windows followed by something, you know, internet followed by something Apple. The organization isn't perfect. It kind of rambles, but then there are sometimes some efforts made to organize things and to put things together. There are certain things that go at the end. If I decide to put job announcements in there, I tend to put those at the end, you know, people announcing their employment opportunities.
But all in all, you certainly do cover the hot topics of the day and highlight what's important for people.
I tend to think that what I put out pretty well covers the important things that are going on. I am certainly open to hearing from people about all of this, and I'm always open, like I say, when the person that complained on Twitter about how it, you know, gee, everything just comes from Twitter. Well, you know, if you want something in Tidbits, by all means, let me know. You can reach me on Twitter. You can reach me via email. I guess you can reach me via Facebook. That's not my favorite network. I do it, but it's one I sort of rebel against, and I don't really do much technology-related stuff on there. But I don't know, I tend to think that pretty well covers the week when I get it done.
So I'm curious. We do Eyes on Success as volunteers, and in 5.5 years, we have never skipped a week, and we have never repeated an episode, and you don't either. But we pre-record the shows so we can submit them to our distributor weeks in advance. But your information is always timely from that week. How do you handle that? I mean, you must leave home once in a while.
Well, I did skip a couple weeks last year when my wife passed on. Short of that, I don't know. Larry and I will always, okay, are we doing Thanksgiving? Are we doing Christmas this year? And he'll say, if you want to, go ahead. It's fine with me. And I say, fine with me. You know, I did it actually when I was in Costa Rica in 2011 with some sometimes questionable internet. I managed to get the issues there. Of late, I've been in England. That didn't really pose any technology problems. So yeah, it's kind of one of the things I'm pleased about is that I do get it done every week.
How many hours a week do you figure this takes you?
Instead of watching TV or listening to radio news, I tend to catch Twitter news feeds. So that takes some time. But the actual time of sitting down and writing the newsletter, that tends to happen, you know, for about 4 hours of Wednesday or so, or maybe a little bit on Tuesday.
Now for this week's final item, how to sign up to get Top Tech Tidbits every Thursday, how to find the archive, and how to reach Dean Martineau.
For people who are interested in signing up to receive the weekly editions of Top Tech Tidbits every Thursday morning, how would they do that?
I'm sure it'll be in the show notes, but if you just go to flying-blind.com and find the link to subscribe to Flying Blind Publications, you'll be able to sign up. If you want, anybody wants to write to me, anybody's welcome, by the way, to write to me, and I can sort of run interference for you on this. And my address is top dot, that being the top dot in the Braille cell, so it's six characters, T-O-P-D-O-T, top dot at gmail.com. And if you, you know, want some assistance getting signed up, I can send Larry a little message and saying, add so-and-so to the tidbits list, and he'll do that.
And I know you also have all of these newsletters archived if people have missed editions and want to look backwards. Where can they find those?
I used to keep, and I still could keep, a text file containing all the issues. I actually haven't maintained it for a while. Nowadays, you can get them all on the flying-blind.com site. There's a link for each year of newsletters that they've been handling, which takes you back to 2008.
And you mentioned that you spend a fair amount of time on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
My Twitter handle is Dean Top Dot.
Can you spell that?
D-E-A-N-T-O-P-D-O-T.
And of course, as usual, you can find all the contact information, his Twitter handle, etc., in the show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1639. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about tips and tricks for your computer or smartphone. We did one of these shows at the beginning of 2016, and it was very popular, so we're doing another one. And this week, we will discuss several ways to make it easier to interact with your device, including some demonstrations. You'll learn tricks for entering CAPTCHAs, working with Siri, Windows, NVDA, and Pandora, controlling your Victor Reader stream, and more. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.